We're doing our workshop on the home, its place of ministry. I don't know your background. How many of you, when you were growing up, had friends or had other people in your home? Just raise your hands. That you entertained other people. Looking back, when I grew up, I can never remember having anyone in our home besides relatives. We never had company come in. I didn't know you did that. And so I can remember in high school that my parents had some friends of parents of my friends over. But that's all there was to it. And so to have the idea that the home could be a place of ministry was totally foreign to me. And so when we talked about ministry and things, well, I always thought, well, that's when you're, you know, giving the gospel or you're out, you know, in the front lines or something like this. And so I didn't really know about that. And even, I think it first began, the idea that you could have a ministry in your home was when we moved to Brazil. And we moved there in 1968. And so when we got there, it was like having your life go from an envelope size to a stamp, because you don't know the language and you talk to people, and when they think you can't speak the language, they think you can't hear. So they talk twice as fast, you know, and twice as loud. And so, and there you are. And so you really begin to feel isolated. And you feel like, you know, people are watching you and things like this. And so we struggled through a year of learning Portuguese, and we moved to a place in Porto Alegre, which is in the southern part of Brazil. And so while we were there, we met another family, Jack and Ruth Amit, and they had five children. At that time, we only had one. And so I can remember just going to their home. And it would take us 45 minutes to get there. And the driving in Brazil was a cross between the Indianapolis 500 and the Mexican road race. Really, every time you went, you know, it was just one of those trips. And so I can remember going there, and first of all, I just felt welcomed. And I can remember little things that Ruth would say, like, well, I put some extra meat in just in case, you know, you might have arrived before lunch. Because they didn't have a telephone and we didn't have a telephone, so there was no way we could call them. And I remember I really kind of was glad when things didn't go quite right with their kids, because I could see how she corrected them. And that was my first introduction to having a ministry in the home. And because our home life was pretty well steady, I didn't realize that a lot of people don't come from that kind of a situation. And I thought, boy, you know, when it comes to life, I am plain vanilla. You know, some people are strawberry and chocolate and pistachio. You know, they have all these things. I think, I'm just plain vanilla. How can my home ever be something that you could have a ministry? And so I was talking one day to a friend of mine. Her name is Susan. And Susan came from a very unusual background. I think her dad's had six wives, and her mom's had three or four. And she said, well, I'll go on a little bit to describe her. And so she kind of grew up with this kind of background, child molestation, the whole bit, went through the hippie movement, and someone introduced her to Christ. She became a Christian and has just done a 180. But she said, you know, and as I was growing up, I can remember in one about a year period in my life, I could go over to my friend's home, and she said it was different. They were polite to each other. They welcomed me in. They let me help. She said, you know, one of my stepdads, when he'd get on to me, he'd say, "And who do you think you are?" She said the answer was to be, "I'm nobody." And so she said, I grew up being nobody. And in our home, our three boys, our two boys and then Lisa now, we always told them, hey, when you get in middle school, you can have your own Bible study. And this has been a real thrill. And so one day, Douglas, who was about 16 then, but he was having a Bible study, and Jack was helping to lead it. So there was Douglas and then Jack and then Ian and John and Scott. And as I looked at them, I thought, you know, there's only one person there who is actually living with his natural parents. My own dear husband had three fathers. He's never met his real dad, who is still living. Scott, his dad, is on drugs, and they're separated, single-parent situation. Ian now has his third father. At that time, had had two, and single-parent situation. John has had two dads and single-parent situation. And I thought, you know, here are three teenage guys, and to have them come over and be in a normal situation, I had no idea of the impact. And just you here, having someone in your home where they see just a what we would just say, hey, is normal, can have a tremendous impact that you don't have any idea. It really began to grow. We came back from, well, when we were also in Brazil, another thing we learned to do is include your family. A lot of people, and if you're young, you know, when you have people over, it's get rid of the kids. You know, well, and I agree, if it's a personal conversation, of course you do. But I noticed in Brazil, when we'd have open Bible studies, that Ken would lead them, because we didn't have enough of the language then. And they had three boys, Kent, Danny, and Brian. And these were with college students. And, oh, the air would get thick and heavy. You know, I don't believe in the Bible. And, you know, a lot of them were communists and all this sort of thing. And so, you know, with all the, you know, fire going around, you know, there'd be Danny, you know, under the chair. He'd be kind of looking around. And Kent would be back behind the couch. And Brian would be sitting on his dad's knee or somewhere. But they listened. And so, as questions were asked, Dad answered them. And then later in the conversations, things would come up, or maybe some girls would be there, and they would ask questions, and Carol, who was Ken's wife, you know, would answer. And so instead of Christianity being what we do on Sunday, it wove itself into the fabric of their lives, and they never got the two separated. And a lot of kids do. One of the biggest complaints my kids have at their public school is the Christian kids have the foulest mouth and they do the very same things that everybody else does. And I think one of the reasons is, you know, they have never seen that it goes together. And your home, especially if you have kids, can be the golden years. And if you're a grandparent, I tell you, you can have a tremendous ministry with your grandkids, because so many kids don't have that. And we talked to Jim Downing, who had seven children, and we asked him, what would you do if you could do it differently? And apparently he had thought about this before, because he said immediately, the first thing I would do, we always told our kids what we were doing. We always told them about our ministry instead of including them in the ministry. And so when we came back to the States and moved to Norman, Oklahoma, then with five children, you don't have a lot of extra time, you know, to do things. And if you're working, you don't have a lot of extra time. And so I just began to ask the Lord, you know, how can you use, as Jean says, this garden variety type person? And so it began with a guy, you know, God will bring someone across your path. And so he began with a guy by the name of Spencer Wernith. You'd love him. Tall blonde from Edina, Minnesota, was captain of the football team, the basketball team, the hockey team. I mean, you know, just one of these, just jewels. My girls thought he was wonderful. And so Spence mowed our lawn one day, and so we kind of invited him over. And since he was in Norman, Oklahoma, and he'd been in Minnesota, he was, you know, a little homesick. And so he began to just drop over. And, you know, if you just include people, there's a difference between the word include and entertain. If you have to entertain someone, you know, you just emotionally start draining. But if you just include them, those emotional leaks get plugged up. And so we just include Spence. I'm doing the wash. Great. Fold clothes, you know, fold the towels. And so he would come over. And so I will never forget one night, we were talking, and all the kids were there. You know, they're kind of like, you've seen these birds on high wires. You know, that's the way ours were. You know, just always perched around. And so, so Spence began to talk, and so we asked him some questions. And, well, what do you think about this? And what do you think about that? And later, we do this when someone is leaving. We also do it on birthdays, but we go around the table, and each one gives a character quality of what we appreciate about that person. Well, you're kind, or well, you talk to me. You know, it could be just little things like this. And Spence, who's about 6'2", you know, with all this background, he just broke down crying. And he said, you know, you're the first person I have ever been around, and he said, that actually asked me what I thought about something. My family never asked me what I thought about anything. And so having someone in your home, first of all, you know, if you just love them, I mean, you've got a ministry. But then just talking to them and asking them and showing how God can and put something together. All of our kids run track. And so Kimberly and Janine had qualified for the Norman Elementary track meet. And so we had taken them over to John Jacobs track, which is where the OU team works out, because we can't use the high school track because it's off limits except for the high school. And we wanted the girls to get a feel of what it was to run around the track twice. And so while we were there, and they were running around and everything, I saw this guy over there doing around the hurdles. And so he was doing some exercises. And Craig at that time was running hurdles for Norman High, and I thought, I think I'll go over and ask him if he'll show me those exercises. No one on the track is, a stranger. Everyone's out there because you want to be. So I went over there and introduced myself, and he looked at me a little funny. And so I told him who I was, and would you please show me these exercises? And I told him why, and he kind of laughed. He said, well, sure, I'll be glad to do that. And so he did, and then Jack went by, and so I drug him over and introduced him to Kevin. And so we got to talking and found out Kevin was from Canada, and he was on the OU track team, ran hurdles. And so the thought went through my brain, invite him to dinner. And I thought, but Lord, he doesn't know us. You know, he sure doesn't know my cooking. But I thought, why not? So I said, Kevin, it's going to be Mother's Day next Sunday, and I know you don't know us, but how would you like to come here, our home, for Sunday dinner? Well, he really did look at me funny, but he thought about it for a minute, and he said, well, it's been a long time since I've had a home-cooked meal. He said, okay, I'll come. Great, so we made the arrangements when we were going to pick him up and everything. Well, that started about a three-year love affair. And he came to our home, and he's kind of a, you know, how intense, you know, athletes can be. We have a schnauzer, you know, with these little dogs that bark a lot. Well, he'd bark, and Kevin goes straight up. And so, you know, he had to get used to that. And but we had him over. And so this last summer, his mother came and spent a week with us before school started. And so I got to meet her. And found out that she's a Christian, loves God, and Kevin's not a Christian yet, but we're getting ready. Jack's talked to him because we just laid the foundation for Kevin and Steve and Milton, who are all on the track team, to have a Bible study with them. But, you know, I was sitting there one day, and it reminded me, we're going to go over Martha and Mary in just a few minutes about it. It says, and as they were traveling, and I thought, you know, Lord, as I was at the track meet, or, you know, I was at the track that day, you brought, to show you how God's sovereignty, okay, Kevin was born in Barbados, which is the West Indies. His dad came from Guyana, which is at the top of South America. His dad's a jeweler. Went from Guyana to Barbados, which is way down, you know, in those little islands. And then he and Amy married. Then they immigrated to Canada. Kevin came all the way from Canada to Norman, Oklahoma. And we met him on that one day, which they're usually not at the track at that time because they're only supposed to be there from 3 to 5, and he had gone early. And God just and put it together. And so when you want to have a ministry in your home, really, in one way, you don't even have to go looking. The woods are full of them. And yet how God can bring you together on that. And one of the things that we learned later, because this has been 3 years, but Amy was just telling me, we were sitting around over tea, and so she said, you know, Kevin had been so homesick that year, so homesick. He didn't know anyone. He'd come, he was trying to prove his, you know, place on the team and everything, and he was so down. And she said, so I called him because it was after Mother's Day, and we were talking. And she said, he sounded different. And she said, Mom, you don't have to worry anymore. He said, I found a family, and if anything happens to me, I know Jack and Barb will take care of me. We had no idea. And yet God just began to weave those together. And so your home is really a place of ministry. And the key, and if you'll turn to the first page on the home, it's place of ministry. It's Isaiah 58, verses 10 through 12. And the very first verse says, and if you give yourself to the hungry. You know, the first is you just give yourself. And if you satisfy the desires of the afflicted, and then you go on and you reread the rewards. You know, a lot of people today are saying, well, boy, what can I do? What can I do? And it's giving yourself. Then what happens? The Lord, your gloom becomes like the midday. The Lord will guide you. He will satisfy your desire in scorched places. He will give strength to your bones. You'll become a watered garden. And those from among you will rebuild the ancient ruins. You will raise up the age-old foundations, and you will be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of the streets in which to dwell. And then Proverbs 31:20, she stretches out her hand to the poor, yea, she stretches forth her hand to the needy. The best financial investment that any Christian can make is in the lives of others. And one of the most practical ways of doing this is to open your home to others. Now, there's some things that happen to your home and family. And on page 2, there's 4 things here. 1, godly goals are reinforced. And, you know, you'll do what's really important to you. And because our kids are all at home, then I'm still, you know, in this phase of our lives. But they see what's really important, but what we give our time to. And you can talk good, but if your kids never see it, then they know it really isn't real. And so when they see, hey, Mom and Dad have people over, and boy, they talk about Christ, it must be important to them. If you're a grandparent and you're telling your kids about, you know, Jesus, because maybe the mom's busy or something, hey, that's important. The ratio of older people coming to know Christ, the ratio is just from childhood to older age, it just goes down tremendously. But to have the time to minister to people who are lonely. And so these goals are reinforced. And then, on number 2, valuable insights are learned. There are two. We try to have a variety of friends at our home. One, we try to get people like Jim White, or Tom Hebert, or some people who really walk with God. And the reason why we do is our kids learn so much, because they have a tendency to think, well, Mom and Dad think this way, but does anybody else in the world? And the highlight for them was a vacation when we went to visit our friends. And they met people, and they'd sit around and listen and talk to them and hear stories. And they said, listen, that's been our favorite vacation. We'd rather do that than go back to Disneyland, because it was real. And they can sit and they can talk and ask Jim White questions. And, well, what do you do when this happens? Or, well, what was your response? Or Tom Hebe was through. You know, if people go through and need a place to stay, good grief, have them over. And because we learned about the Eastern Bloc countries. We learned what it was there. But I remember Craig saying, you know, the thing that impressed me the most about Tom was that I knew he had the power with all of his experience. He could just squash me like a bug. But he didn't. He just loved me. And when I asked a question, you know, he gave me his attention, and he responded just like I was a real person. And so this is the influence that other people can have. And then we started about 2 years ago having international students live with us. And the reason we did this is when we first came back to Brazil, and right before we met Spence, we got ingrown. I mean, we had a little house, and I either could see everybody or hear them. And so we were always just dealing with the combs problems and what was going on with the combs and dealing with it. And I thought, we're getting so ingrown. And so we began to pray, and so the Lord opened up a door to move to a larger home. And Craig and Doug had several years where they fought all the time, but then when Doug got almost as big as Craig, then they became friends, and so they decided they'd room together. Well, that left us an extra bedroom. And so we said, listen, guys, what would you all think about having someone live with us? Because OU has an English language school, and they bring in students from all over the world, and they stay with you. Average stay is 2 months, and it's a home stay, and they eat with us, and we help them on their English, and they go to class during the day. What would you all think about that? Oh, yeah, great idea. Okay. So we began to sign up for it because I wanted to stretch our perspective and our horizon, because a lot of times with kids, they're so narrowed that peer pressure becomes too heavy because that's their world. But you meet someone from France, you may take French. You'll never see France again like you did. So we signed up. Well, we have had students from Brazil, Mexico, Colombia, Puerto Rico, Mexico, Thailand, Japan, Korea, France, and Switzerland. I think I got all of them. And it has been the best thing we ever, ever did. Because what it began to do, you know, you train, you know, in battle. And so the kids began to learn, they don't understand English. So they'd slow down and talk to them. So instead of just talking about what they wanted to talk about at the table, they talked about what might interest the student. And so we learn about their country. And so as some we would get could speak practically no English, others could speak more. And some of the ones we've had have just been fascinating. Telmo was a non-practicing Jew, a commercial pilot in Brazil. And so about 30. And so when he came, he kind of blew in, you know, and here he was. And I thought, I always fix ham sandwiches for them to take to school. This is non-practicing, but I don't know really what that means. And so the first day I said, would you, I have sandwiches. Do you want chicken, tuna, or ham? He laughed. He said, I'll take ham. I am non-practicing. So he sat down and he just really, you know, we fell in like a group of bandits. And so he began to talk and visit with the kids. And so the more as we began to talk and everything over the month's time, well, he brought up things like, well, there really is no God. And there really aren't any absolutes. And so we'd sit there as we were eating. We'd say, you know, that's a fascinating statement that there is no God. How did you come to that conclusion? And, you know, so he'd talk a little bit, and we'd say, oh, you mean, you know, you've searched everything, all the knowledge, you know, here, all the knowledge, everywhere else, and you can say, hey, relax, I've checked it out, and there is no God. We said, well, no, I wouldn't quite say that. So, well, would you give us 10%? Maybe there is a God. Well, maybe 10%. So we began to talk about this, and then he'd say things like, there are no absolutes. And we'd say, well, how do you fly a plane then? You know, if there are no absolutes. Well, see, what was happening is that as we would interweave these conversations, your children, everything they will face as an adult, they will have faced in miniature as a child. And the problem that a lot of Christian kids have, it's not that they don't know the answers. They don't know the questions. Because if you were raised in a Christian home, then a lot of you just never questioned. boy, you never crossed your mind there wasn't a God, or there weren't absolutes, or these things. And so then they hit the college campus, or they hit somewhere, and here comes, you know, 20th century man, and just floors them, because they've never searched through why. And so we had a chance to use these as building blocks. So when they went back to high school, and listen, they hit it in high school, well, there is no God. Well, yeah, we talked about that at the dinner table, and Dad said, and this was the scripture we read, and they soak this up. So you use it as a teaching tool. And then the interesting thing, like with Telmo, when we got ready to leave, we went through the same, you know, character qualities. He could have cared less what Jack and I had to say. But, I mean, he was all eyes and ears on what the kids had to say about him. So your children can be tremendous. And they had talked to him about things like this. And so your home, see, he would ask the kids things he'd never ask an adult. And he'd ask them, and so then they'd talk, you know, or the kids, they're just so spontaneous. What do you mean there's no God? Well, sure there is. How do you think all, you know, God here, you know? And you just, you know, out of the mouths of babes, it was great. And then we just heard from Jan Trotman, who's German, but he was raised in Argentina. And he's also atheist, kind of a string of atheists through. And so we talked, and he wrote back, and he said, well, I've been going to church a little bit, and, well, they sure present it differently than you all did. So I had thought, I ought to read the Bible for myself. And I finished the Old Testament, and I'm starting on the New Testament. And if I send you some of my questions, would you answer them? And I tell you another thing that's helped on me, you know, I get all tight sometimes, and I think, oh, I've got to present the gospel. You know, you just, But when it was in the home, and we had a French student, his name was Christian, which was real interesting, and he wasn't one. But we were sitting there, and, you know, I thought, I don't want this to be the last time I see him. I want to see him in heaven. And I could hardly wait to give him the bridge illustration. And so he took it, you know, and he read it, and he thought about it. And, you know, and I think, you know, God, you're going to use that in his life. But it's out of the abundance of the heart that the mouth speaketh. And when your heart, you just love this person, you don't have to create an artificial thing to have a ministry. As a matter of fact, I never will forget Ken Lotus. They're back in the States now. And so Ken said, you won't believe this. Someone asked me the other day, well, Ken, when are you going to start your ministry? He said, no one's asked me that for 22 years. He said, what do you mean start my ministry? I am my ministry. I am the gospel. I mean, it's my life. And so it's not that, you know, you wait to start your ministry. You know, you are the ministry. You are the gospel. You're already in it. It's just a matter of, today, Lord, what do you want me to do? And then the house is cleansed, and that's just, you know, you need to just go through and say, hey, is my home warm? Is it friendly? And all these things. Now, I just want to share just a little bit now from Mary and Martha, and I know this is familiar to you, but, you know, how we just need to be reminded sometimes. And in Luke 10, verses 38 through 42, I just love this. Now, as they were traveling along, now, as I was going to the grocery store, now, as I was going, you know, do you ever notice God is rarely in the spectacular? Do you remember when Elijah was up, you know, in the cave, and God was trying to get his attention, you know, and there was the thunder, but God was not in the thunder. There was fire, but God was not in the fire. There was a little, small voice. God is rarely in the spectacular. And something that's helped me a great deal is that most of the time, most of the help that I've ever received was in an off comment that someone made. It's kind of like a river, you know, as you flow toward God, you don't know what the water along the banks is doing, but it's on dry ground. And Susan, who I told you about earlier, we had a couples conference, and she was there, and she said, you know, the thing that helped me the most, and I thought, oh, good grief, you know, we'll be here all day, because I mean, it was just a tremendous conference. She said, it's when your husband introduced Jim and Jerry White. I said, oh, really? She said, yes. He said, one thing he said about them, that they were transparent. And she said, transparent? I always thought that was a weakness. Because she said, I'm so open, you know, with people, and I tell them what I think and what goes on, and I've been trying to keep all this back. She said, to know that I can be transparent and open with people and it's all right. She said, it's changed my life. I thought, you know, in a little conversation, God used that. And that's what he'll do with you. And so as they were traveling along, as you're going along with Jesus, and then one day in your life has eternal value. Isn't that a great thing? And someone said, you know, really we only have the present. God says, you know, what is my name? I am. Not I will be. Not I was. But I am. And that's today. And it can come unexpectedly. And I think probably Mary and Martha knew Jesus was coming. But they probably didn't know he was going to write that up. You know, that you and I, 2,000 years later, were going to be reading it. If I had been Martha, I would have had a different day. So, you never know. So, what you do is important. And so as Jesus is traveling through life, I can be a part of his ministry. And then here, see, we think he's only going to use our victories. You know, when I have a victory, God will use it. Boy, he used their great defeat. Isn't that encouraging? Don't you have days when you just think, good night, a defeat, and God will use that. So, on your little worksheet there, we've got some positive qualities about Martha. What's one positive quality that you can think that Martha had? What would be one, just kind of off the top of your head?
She could cook.
She could cook, right. That's right. My boys are very worried about that. You know, well, what if I fall in love with someone who can't cook? Okay, so she could cook. Right. What would be one other?
Hard worker.
She was transparent. She was willing to open her home. She was willing to prepare for 13 men. You know, and I finally could identify with her because about a month ago, we had 9 football players, 3 wrestlers, and 1 track guy in our home. Listen, it was a blast. You know, I thought, okay, key thing is include them. So I got 4 of them in the kitchen with me, and they were all over 6'4", all weighed over 250. You know, they were linemen. You know, huge. So one was cutting up the onions, one was cutting up the tomatoes, one was doing the lettuce, and one was making the hamburger patties. And so another thing to learn is just let people do their thing. And so Baron was doing he said, do you have any garlic salt or powder? And I said, well, I've got garlic powder, but remember, it's a lot stronger than garlic salt. Okay, so he took it. You know, I thought, they're used to dorm food. They'll never notice the difference, you know. And so, but I just included them. And so then when they went into the den and had their hamburgers, well, here with our kids and talking to them, and, you know, their national size rings, Kimberly, you know, could put on. But the key thing was they were just included and ask them questions about their life. So that's a positive quality you can have. Now, Martha had a few negative qualities. And if we read about it in Luke 10, it says, now as they were traveling along, he, being the Lord, entered a certain village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. And she had a sister called Mary, who moreover was listening to the Lord's word, seated at his feet. But Martha was distracted with all her preparations, and she came to him and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the serving alone? Then tell her to help me. But the Lord answered and said to her, Martha, Martha, you are worried and bothered about so many things, but only a few things are necessary. Really? Only one. For Mary has chosen the good part, which shall not be taken away from her. This is a picture of life. Because we all face this kind of a situation every day. Now, what had happened to Martha? She got distracted. I mean, Jesus was in her home. I mean, she had him in, but she got distracted. I thought, was she trying to do too much? You know, was she more concerned with the preparations And then it was all her preparations, and then it was her preparations. Now, I wonder if Mary had completed all of hers. And the things that happen when we get distracted and bothered, it clouds our vision. And it clouds the purpose for why we're doing what we're doing in the first place. And then when we get distracted and it begins to bother us, then we see the problem incorrectly. And then we try to solve it incorrectly. So it's a stair step down. And so these are some of the negative things that were beginning to happen to her. And what was happening, that she was getting anxious, critical, and she was having negative emotions. And one principle in life, if you don't choose the best part first, you will get anxious, and you'll get critical, and you'll have negative emotions. That's just a basic principle in life, if you don't choose the best part first. Well, then how did Martha perceive the problem? She said, well, Jesus doesn't care. Mary won't help. So she came up with a temporary solution. And aren't we like that? We want a temporary, immediate solution. You know, the artery is bleeding, but hand me a Band-Aid. And then she felt abandoned. She thought, boy, I am doing everything. You know, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the serving alone? Listen, when you're serving without Jesus, you really are alone. I don't care what kind of a ministry it is, whether it's a Bible study or one-on-one, but if you are not there to serve that person, then you get all of these negative things because you are expecting them to reciprocate you. And so she felt abandoned. Hey, I'm doing all this work and nobody knows and appreciates me. So you have to have a servant attitude. Then she thought, okay, I know what I'm going to do about it. Because what she had done, you know, she had allowed something good to get in the way. And one thing that can happen to us is when we're doing things for the Lord and he doesn't respond the way we think he ought to, we get mad at him. And there's three things we accuse God of. One, he doesn't care. You know, and that's Luke 10:40. He doesn't care. And then he isn't fair. Jeremiah was talking to the Lord, and he said, Lord, I won't talk to you about your righteousness, but I sure would like to talk to you about your justice. You know, why are these people all coming into our country? So we think he doesn't care, he isn't fair, and then he isn't there. John 11:32, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And so we accuse the Lord of these three things, basically. You don't care, you aren't fair, and you aren't there. So what did Martha try to do? Well, she did come to the Lord. You know, it's interesting that Jesus didn't go after her. And I think the reason why is, you know, he waited until she really wanted a solution. She really wanted to change. Larry Crabb, who is a Christian counselor, one of the first questions he asks someone when they come in is, do you really want to change? Because if you really don't want to change, there's no way I can help you. And I think sometimes, you know, Jesus will let us stay in the kitchen and get all hot, you know, and everything, until finally, you know, we come to him. Well, she came three ways. She had the wrong attitude. Jesus doesn't care. She had the wrong assumption. Mary's the problem. And she had the wrong answer. You tell her to help me. So she came with all the wrong reasons and everything else. But the key thing was she came. And that is what we have to do. You know, we have to go to Jesus. We have to want a solution. Matthew 5:1, in the Beatitudes, you know, it says that, you know, Jesus went up on the mountain and he opened his mouth teaching them. Do you ever wonder why he went up on the mountain? Well, Jesus did not make it easy for the multitude. There, it cost. They had to walk up it. And I thought, you know, Lord, there are times, you know, we have to find. We go to you. You don't make it easy. And so he just sat there and waited until she came with her exposed problem, because we'll only seek help for exposed problems. If we think we don't have a problem, we don't go. So once it's exposed, then we go for help. Well, Jesus saw what the root problem was. And the root problem was, you know, that Jesus wasn't first in her life. She was worried and she was bothered about many things. And we have to come to the conclusion that Jesus is the solution. So she came. And I'm sure, you know, when she came in there, she went out differently. Let's jump now to what was Mary's decision. Well, first of all, you know, she chose to be there. So it's always a choice. And I tell this to young mothers, you know, this will, you know, they won't always be little. Your kids won't always be little. But listen, it doesn't get any better. You're always going to be busy. You know, I've heard men say, when I retired, I thought I'd have nothing to do. I'm busier now than I ever was. So it's a choice, especially when we're busy, and especially when we think we're going to be misunderstood. I wonder if Mary thought, oh, I know what Martha's going to say. You know, sure enough, she did. So it's a choice, because other people will always want our time. And if you're a person who's given to hospitality especially, then you will have to set little walls, if that's a good word, but to realize that, hey, you know, even though there are good things to do and it's ministering to people and everything, listen, that's got to wait. I've got to get my time with Jesus. John Crawford gives this poem. I just love it. If your outgo exceeds your intake, then your upkeep will be your downfall. If your outgo exceeds your intake, then your upkeep will be your downfall. So Mary had the right choice. Now, we can be helpers to other people, but we're never the solution. And one thing that I think we need to learn as we work with people is that, you know, the key thing is we keep pointing them to Jesus. And that we don't become their amateur providence. I remember one time a friend of mine was getting ready to go somewhere, and so her husband said, well, where are you going? Oh, well, I've got to go help so-and-so. She's crying. And her husband said, well, maybe she needs to cry. Oh, she never thought of that. And so it's not that we don't help, but there are times when let's be sure we don't get in the way when someone needs to go to Jesus, to be sure that we let them find that he is the solution. And then if you're young and you're having children, another thing I've always tried to keep in mind, it's always easier to disciple other people's children than your own. Now, they may be 20 years old or 30 years old, but the problem or the trap you can fall into is you're so busy discipling other people and working with them that you neglect your own children. There are no replays in life. And so remember that, you know, each day, you know, is sufficient to itself. And God gives you enough time to do what you need to do that day. Well, what does Jesus want me to learn from the story? Well, I think there's some questions we can ask ourselves. What distracts me? What worries and bothers me? Do I go to Jesus with my problems? Or do I go and say, oh, Lord, I think I've got the solution, and run out? A lot of times, we'll do everything but just go and ask. In Psalms, there is the royal law of asking. It's Psalms 2:8. Ask of me, and I will surely give thee the nations as thine inheritance. Even Jesus had to ask. It's the royal law of prayer. And a lot of times it's the last thing we really want to do. We want to tell Jesus what to do. But just to say, just to ask and go to Jesus with our problems and find the solution from him. Well, just in closing, one thing you need to remember is that one home run doesn't win the game. This time, Mary was with Jesus. But when Lazarus died, who went to Jesus first? Martha did. Mary stayed in the house, and Jesus went to her. So it's a day-by-day thing that we need to spend time with the Lord. So having a ministry in your home, really, the key is just if you have Jesus first in your priorities, and your objective is to serve people and to love them, you will have a ministry. You will be a ministry. And to realize, you know, what God will do with that, it's tunneling. Gene calls it tunneling. You know, a lot of people don't see it. It's quiet. But it's different from mountain climbing. When you're mountain climbing, you're throwing rocks down, you know, on your way to the top. You know, and it may fall on everybody behind you. But when you tunnel, it's quiet. No one knows about it. No one sees it. But your Heavenly Father in heaven sees it. So I think one of the things that is so great about having a ministry in your home is that is where it began when Jesus was here, was in the home, and that we can be a part of his ministry. Let's pray. Father, as we think about you and Father, how you were in different homes, you attended wedding feasts, you were comfortable with the Christian, the non-Christian, and how you did impromptu things. You had a picnic by the sea. People never felt uncomfortable by an ostentatious setting or trying to copy something that you did, but it was impossible. Everything you did in this light, we can do. We can open our homes. We can talk about you, and we can share the bread of life. So give us a heart to reach out to people, to open our homes, that they might come and hear about you, the Savior. And when we look back over the several years at our home and the people we've had in our home, we're just amazed how you can bring people from all over the world, literally, and have them hear about you. And it may be the only opportunity they'll ever hear. Just give us a servant attitude and love for people, Father. Thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.